genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brain.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Ah, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turn now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're live every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. You can also hear us streaming over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura County. If all of that sounds like National Public Radio, well, you're getting the idea. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is NPR done right. If you want to join in the conversation, you can always call us at 639-0008, or if you're outside of the area code, it's area code 805-639-0008. Every show has a theme, and our theme in the second hour is topics that bear scrutiny. Each of my guests will present an idea that we need to examine very closely. My first guest has a unique perspective on global competitiveness. He's the head of the Consumer Electronics Association. He believes that the United States can regain its competitive edge by being more innovative. We'll discuss his ideas from his book, The Comeback. My second guest is a Renaissance man. He's an attorney, a political candidate, a novelist, a nonfiction author, and a provocateur. He's attacked such topics as the Kennedy assassination, placing President George W. Bush on trial for murder, and he criticized the O.J. Simpson ruling as well. We'll discuss his findings as he turns his attention to defending agnosticism and from his latest book, The Divinity of Doubt. My third guest will share with us the fastest growing asset in the commodities complex, that is silver. He's an expert on money, metals, and mining. We'll discuss silver as an investment vehicle to protect assets and to grow wealth. And as always, if you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. My first guest, Gary Shapiro, is president and CEO of the Consumer Electronics Association, CEA for short. That's the U.S. Trade Association representing more than 2,000 consumer electronics companies and owning and producing the continent's largest annual trade show, the International CES. Gary has led the industry in its successful transition to high-definition television. He is a charter inductee into the Academy of Digital Television Pioneers, and he received its highest award as the industry leader most influential in advancing high-definition television. Gary is also the chairman of the Home Recording Rights Coalition. That's the HRRC for short. Gary leads a staff of 140 employees and thousands of industry volunteers. He's testified before Congress on technology and on business issue more than 20 times. His latest book is titled The Comeback, How Innovation Will Restore the American Dream. Prior to joining the CEA, Gary was an associate at the law office of Squire Sanders. He's also worked on Capitol Hill as an assistant to a member of Congress. He received his law degree from Georgetown University Law Center and is a Phi Beta Kappa graduate with a major double in economics and psychology from Birmingham University. He's married to a retina surgeon, which probably gives him such clear vision of the future for our economy. Welcome to the show, Gary. How are you today?
Thank you so much, Bill. That was the most unique introduction I've ever gotten, especially that last line.
Well, thank you for being my guest on the show. As I told you off the air, I've been looking forward to this interview for some time now. There is so much that you covered in your book. We'll never be able to get it all in the short amount of time that we have. But I'd like to start at the beginning, because I always think that's a very good place to start. And you tell a very amusing and yet at the same time disturbing story of what jolted you into writing the book. It's a story that first took place in China when you were a member of a trade delegation at a banquet there. Tell my listeners that story and why it prompted you to write this book.
I was in a large, successful province of about 100 million people, and I was sitting next to the top communist official who's running this whole province. And there's about 1,000 people in the audience, and after he just, although we had interpreters behind us, when there was a moment when he didn't, and he goes to me, he puts his thumb up in the air, and he says, China going up. And I agreed, China's doing phenomenally well. But then he put his thumb down, pointed it down towards the earth, and he said, U.S. going down. And I was pretty upset about it. I excused myself immediately and went to talk to one of my board members who calmed me down. And ever since that day, I've thought of it every day. And this was about 3 or 4 years ago when, in the height of the mortgage crisis, and they were blaming us for the fact that they weren't selling as much product as they were used to. And we were suffering even more, I felt. But I thought about that, and I turned the anger into the fact that he was right. And I think he was right because since September 11, 2001, we have fundamentally changed how we do things in America. And we have had a strategy, maybe not a declared strategy, but our strategy for 200 years has been to attract the people from around the world who were, you know, think they can do things better. They're smart. They want to be rewarded for their risks and their success. They work very, very hard. And then in September 2001, we got more inward focused. We got defensive. We started spending a huge amount of money on, you know, patting down six-year-old kids and things like that. We didn't get very smart. We stopped the best students from around the world and entrepreneurs from wanting to come here. We treat them pretty horribly. And instead of being this successful mosaic of entrepreneurs and innovators, we've instead shifted to a defensive approach. We don't enter free trade agreements. We've spent much more money than we have. And we've undertaken a whole bunch of policies which are going to hurt us in the long term.
Well, I want to talk about some of those policies. I want to talk about some of the findings in your book. But I find it interesting that you have identified what many other business pundits have also identified, and that is that the decade of the 2000s, really from 2001 to 2011, is sort of the lost decade of innovation. Is that an apt title for that past 10 years?
I wouldn't say it's a lost decade of innovation. I think it's a lost decade where our government made fundamentally bad decisions, beginning with how we reacted to September 11th, to the bailouts and the stimulus packages and the phenomenal amount of spending that's gone in the last 2 years. We are very innovative. We own the Internet. And really, because of the last thing, whether it's Google, Yahoo, eBay, Amazon, Foursquare, or even the later, like Facebook and some of the other ones that are coming, Groupon, we have set the bar in the Internet. We own the motion picture industry, biotechnology. We're great at drugs and music, semiconductor chips. We have great companies like Apple. And a lot of this has done well in the last 10 years. So I would say rather that we are setting ourselves up for failure in a whole bunch of ways because of policies we're undertaking now. I mean, basically, let's face it, we just totally have stolen from the next generation so we could feel good with cash for clunkers and stimulus packages and first-time home buyers and, you know, whether it's enhancing benefits so now that 50% of the American population is now getting a check from the government. You know, the takers have exceeded the makers now, and that's a very dangerous position to be in as a country.
We're talking to Gary Shapiro, everybody, author of the book, The Comeback, How Innovation Will Restore the American Dream. Gary, let's bring it back to innovation for just a moment. Make the case for innovation. Why do we need more innovation right now? And more importantly, why is the United States so uniquely suited for innovation?
Well, we are in deep, deep financial trouble. Even the president is finally going to acknowledge it today in a speech. And we have three choices. We could raise taxes, we could cut spending, or we can grow. In reality, I think we have to look at all three to really solve the problem. But growth only comes from one thing, and that is from innovation and from exports. Obviously, if the economy grows, there's more jobs, there's more tax revenue from the government, you know, you get closer to reducing the federal deficit. So we need growth. We need economic growth. It's so critical. And growth is from innovation. Innovation in so many different ways means you're doing something better that someone is willing to pay for. It doesn't have to be a manufacturing process. It could be an invention, or it could be even retailing. I mean, Starbucks is an innovator. Amazon is an innovator. It's just doing something better that people are willing to pay for. And that's what we are so good at. And the reason we're good at it is because, as you have recognized in prior programs, the First Amendment is our gift to the world, in a sense. That means that you could create something new, and the government will not be able to tear you apart for it. Certainly your competitors, the old guys you threaten, will try, and they'll ask government to block you, but the government itself cannot shut you down simply because you're trying something new. I think we benefit from our diversity and the fact that we're a mosaic of immigrants, and it's in our blood, it's genetic, that we come, you know, our forefathers came here for a better life, and they worked hard to do that, and they came up with new ideas. We reward people who do good things, whether it's a Bill Gates or a Steve Jobs. They've invented something people are willing to pay for, and they deserve their reward. And it's also, in the U.S., we're the only country in the world where you could fail at a business, and that's considered success in education. Every other culture, that is something that's a badge of dishonor. Here, it's experience that matters and will help you the next time you try something. So we have an attitude that I think is very healthy and is worth preserving and worth remembering. That's what makes us distinctly American. And we got to make sure we keep that going. And, yeah, there are factors pushing us. I think the union culture is definitely harmful, the entitlement culture, that, you know, everyone is entitled to certain things and certain payments from government. I think we have to shift that, and that requires leadership. And frankly, I don't think we're getting that type of leadership we need, whether from Republicans or Democrats. And I'm hoping the president will say something worthwhile today, because we have kids risking their lives in Iraq and Afghanistan, and the least we could do as Americans is start sacrificing a little bit. And that means that we work harder so our kids will have a better life. And we're not. We're taking it easy.
Yeah.
And that's a shame.
All right. We're talking to Gary Shapiro, everybody. And Gary, we've got a couple of areas that I want to explore with you from your book in a little bit more depth. So, and you talk about so many, but I'm just going to hone in on a few that are pertinent to my listeners here in California. The first is immigration. And you sort of touched on this, that we are a melting pot. We're a mosaic of immigrants and so forth. Immigrants, you say in your book, work harder. They're more entrepreneurial in spirit. And one of the big stumbling blocks right now is the H-1B visas for educated immigrants to fill some of the engineering scientific posts that Americans don't seem to be stepping up to take. But I want to ask you the other side of that, because when you discuss the immigration challenge, you have the high-end people that we all want to attract from India, China, wherever they may be coming from, to fill those high-end jobs. But also, what about the scores of illegal immigrants coming across the border into this country that don't fill the high-end jobs, that fill the low-end menial labor jobs? Talk to me about immigration as a policy, if you will.
Well, to me, I mean, we do spend most of the time in the public air focusing on illegal immigration. I'd rather talk about strategic immigration. Who do we want here? You know, and, you know, first of all, English should be our official language. To be a citizen, you have to understand English. But we have some crazy things that we have to change. We have to change the fact that everyone who's a citizen automatically gets to bring in, you know, everyone in their family. We want to get people who are going to carry their own weight, who are going to speak English, who are going to not be a drain on society. And certainly illegal immigration is something we should know who's here, and we should make decisions as to whether those people should be here or not. And, the truth is that if you press the magic button and could get rid of all illegal immigrants, our economy would fall apart immediately. So we have to, I don't just go along with the thing that all illegal immigration should just get kicked out of here. I think there should be some type of way we figure out who is really good and valuable and we want to keep, and who we should force to leave. We've spent a phenomenal amount of resources, trying to secure the border, which is maybe an impossible task. I would rather make sure I'm not one of these people that care that much, that if I have to show my ID and who I am, that I'm a U.S. citizen and prove that, I'm willing to do that. So I'm less concerned about the borders than I am more about willing to give the, you know, focus on keeping the fact, keeping us strong as a nation and allowing our citizens, the ones that are legitimately here, to have an expectation that their kids will have a better life. And I think to a certain extent we have grown better because we have immigration. Every generation, and you know, they've done well. Look how the Asians have done so well educationally and contributed so much in science and medical care. They've come here, they've worked very hard, and they've proven themselves, and they've done it through merit. And that's a generalization. Not every Asian has done that, but they've done well. And then there's categories of immigrants that, you know, have not done well. And maybe we shouldn't treat every country and every immigrant as if they're the same. Right now we treat Iceland and India as if they're the same. Iceland has 300,000 people. India has over 1 billion. But yet they get the same number of slots to fill as legal immigrants. It doesn't make any sense.
I love the concept of strategic immigration. We're talking to Gary Shapiro, everybody, author of a book, The Comeback, How Innovation Will Restore the American Dream. And Gary, there's just so much more to talk about, but I'm going to shift away from immigration and education for just a moment and really focus on another area where the United States, surprisingly, is lacking, and that's broadband usage. I was surprised to read in your book that the United States ranks 15th in terms of the percentage of households with broadband internet access. Now, that was interesting in and of itself. Another factoid from the book, U.S. average broadband speeds are half of that of Hong Kong and South Korea. So how do we get more broadband to people to move at faster speeds so that we can get more innovation from the internet?
Well, right now, I think the major thing that government can do and should do, because I don't believe the government should be spending money, I'd rather government get money, is the fact is that most of the usable wireless spectrum is being used by television broadcasters. They have a tremendous amount of it, yet their audience has gone down from 100% to fewer than 10% of the American public that actually use an antenna to receive a television signal. With digital technology, they can consolidate and all sorts of other technology that can get a signal to a computer. So the plan that's now before Congress, which both Republicans and Democrats seem to be embracing, is that even though the broadcasters never paid for this spectrum, it's loaned to them for five-year terms, that they be paid in a voluntary incentive auction, and we get some of that spectrum back and reuse it so we have fewer dropped cell phone calls. You know, now with, you know, iPads and smartphones, the amount of information simply going wirelessly is doubling almost every year, and our systems can't hold it anymore. Now, the fact that Korea and Hong Kong are ahead of us doesn't bother me, because those, I've been to those countries, and they are tiny, consolidated, mega apartment buildings. And the truth is, a lot of Americans do get broadband at their office rather than their home. And we'll catch up eventually in terms of wired broadband, but in terms of wireless broadband, which is clearly the future, we have to make some big decisions quickly, and that's in Congress's lap right now.
Wow. We're talking to Gary Shapiro, who's the head of the CEA, at the Consumer Electronics Association. He's also the author of the book, The Comeback, How Innovation Will Restore the American Dream. Gary, what do you want readers to take away from reading your book, The Comeback?
What I want them to do is accept the fact that we are failing as a generation, because we're the first one in American history to basically steal from our kids. You know, we're going to four-day school weeks and things like that, just because what we're doing is we basically shifted their money to us. And every other generation, our parents' generation and others, has always sacrificed for the kids, and we're stealing from the kids. And it's embarrassing. And I have a three-year-old child, and I want to, you know, I'm an older father, but when I'm gone, I want him to say, well, Dad did everything he could to have changed the situation we're in. And if enough people stand up and say that to our government, elect the right people in office to make the tough decisions, and we pay these people in office to make tough decisions, not to pander to us with silver buzzed, you don't have to sacrifice type solutions. So that is what I would like them to take away, and that they have an obligation to get engaged and let their politicians or run for office. That's what, you know, I'd like to say. I'd like to see different types of people run for office.
Well, Gary, I'm sure your child will look back and say, my dad did everything he possibly could. We've been talking to Gary Shapiro, author of the book, The Comeback, How Innovation Will Restore the American Dream. Gary, if people want to learn more about you, maybe learn more about the CEA or learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
CE.org.
CE.org, and that's consumerelectronics.org.
Right.
That is a great place. Gary, thank you so much for being our special guest here.
Thanks
on Brainstorming. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed it.
Take care. My pleasure, too.